Welcome to today's deep dive into the source material.
Glad to be here.
So, if you're listening to this, you probably already know that keeping up with the AI industry is, well, it's basically like drinking from a fire hose these days.
Oh, absolutely. A very fast, very expensive fire hose.
Right. So today, we're pulling directly from the Ghost in the Machine daily AI briefing. We're looking at just the last 24 hours of developments, and our mission today is to unpack this massive flip in the landscape.
Yeah, it really is a profound shift. I mean, for the last few weeks, the whole narrative has been about AI systems finding vulnerabilities in traditional software, right?
Like the AI is the hunter.
Exactly. But today's sources show that the AI layer itself is now, well, it's the ultimate vulnerability.
And we are going to dig into the mechanics of that.
Yeah.
And then we have to talk about the money, because we're looking at this junk-grade financing that is quietly propping up this massive compute build-out.
The financials are wild right now.
They really are. And later on, for those of you wondering about your own careers, we have a major counterfact to explore. You know those mass AI job losses that every CEO predicted a year ago?
The AI apocalypse.
Yeah, that one. Well, they still haven't shown up in the aggregate data, and we need to understand why.
But we should definitely start with the plumbing. Because the newest target for attackers is the AI control plane itself.
Right. The lead story in today's briefing is the compromise of LateLM.
Which is huge.
Yeah. For anyone building these systems, LateLM is essentially, well, it's the universal translator. It's an AI gateway.
Right. Because if you're a massive enterprise, you don't want your developers writing custom code every time they want to talk to OpenAI, and then completely different code for Anthropic and Google and so on.
Exactly. You use a gateway like LightLM to route all those requests. It sits right in the middle and basically holds all the API keys.
Which turns it into the most lucrative target imaginable for a hacker.
I was thinking about this earlier. Is it kind of like building an impenetrable vault for your valuables, right? But then just leaving the master key sitting on the lobby coffee table?
That is a perfect analogy. Or like using a third-party valet service for a highly secure building, and the valet is just handing out master keys to anyone who slips them a $20 bill.
Wow.
The perma-security is totally irrelevant if the routing mechanism just gives up the credentials.
And the way this attack actually happened is terrifyingly simple. I mean, attackers didn't break into LightLM directly.
No, they didn't.
They compromised Aqua Security's Trivi scanner, which is, ironically, a tool designed to check for vulnerabilities.
You can't make that up.
Right. So LightLM's automated continuous integration pipeline pulled in this poison scanner, which then pushed a bad release to PyPI, the main Python package index.
Yep.
But how did the payload actually execute without anyone noticing? The briefing mentions it ran via a .dash-pth file at interpreter startup. Walk us through that mechanism.
Sure. So a .dash-pth, or path file, is a configuration file used in Python. When you launch a Python environment, before it even looks at your actual application code, it reads these path files to know where all the necessary libraries are located.
Okay, that makes sense.
But the design flaw or feature, depending on who you ask, is that you can embed executable code inside these path files.
Wait, really? So it runs in the background before the actual program even wakes up?
Precisely. Because it ran at interpreter startup, the payload fired regardless of whether the developer actually imported LightLM into their active code.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just the sheer act of spinning up the environment triggered the execution. And it didn't just look around blindly. It specifically scanned for and harvested environmental variables named OpenAI AppKey and Anthropic AppKey.
It knew exactly what it was hunting for.
Exactly.
Now, a security firm called CloudSec just put a number on the damage. They tracked this payload across more than 2,500 organizations and over 434,000 CI/CD pipelines.
That scale is just massive.
It is. We are talking about exposure for names like NVIDIA, AWS, Samsung, Cisco, but I do have to throw a massive caveat on this right now for you listening.
Right, the reconstructed exposure part.
Yes. These numbers represent reconstructed exposure. CloudSec is estimating this based on captured attacker loot. This is not a list of confirmed breaches by the companies themselves.
Right. We have to separate security vendor marketing from, you know, confirmed corporate disaster.
Exactly.
But that distinction is crucial. Reconstructed exposure means the keys were in environments that touched the poison package. But the window of time here is what really highlights the severe asymmetry of supply chain attacks.
How long is it up?
The poison package was only live on the Python package index for 40 minutes back in March.
40 minutes.
40 minutes. That was all it took to instantly grab credentials from hundreds of thousands of pipelines.
That is wild. Which brings us to the next layer of the security nightmare. It's not just the gateways leaking. Researchers have now found vulnerabilities inside the models themselves.
This one is fascinating.
Yeah, they found they could decode the encrypted reasoning traces of frontier models, like Anthropic's Claude, by feeding them to their smaller, less aligned sibling models.
Let's break down why these models have encrypted reasoning traces in the first place, because it's important.
Oh.
When an advanced model processes a really complex prompt, it generates internal reasoning tokens. It's essentially thinking out loud in a scratch pad before it gives you the final answer.
Right.
The providers encrypt these traces to protect their intellectual property and, honestly, to hide the messy, sometimes completely alien logic the models use.
But researchers took an encrypted reasoning blob from a highly capable model, Claude Opus, and fed it into a smaller model, Haiku. Why does the smaller model just spill the secrets?
Because the smaller models lack the robust safety conditioning of their larger siblings. Okay. So the researchers basically tricked Haiku into acting as a decryption key.
Oh my.
It didn't recognize the encrypted blob as a restricted internal scratch pad. It just saw data and obediently transcribed the raw thoughts word for word.
And the real-world consequences are already documented in the brief. A scan of 7,000 publicly shared Claude Code and Codex sessions recovered 62 API keys and 33 passwords.
Just sitting there in the decrypted reasoning traces.
And then there is the geopolitical angle, which honestly feels like a spy novel.
It really does.
Researchers fed decoded Claude Opus reasoning into a Chinese model called Kimi K3 and found its output shifted measurably toward Claude's style and performance.
Okay, but we must be incredibly careful with that claim.
Right, the caveat.
The researchers explicitly state they cannot causally establish distillation.
Meaning we can't definitively say Kimi copied Claude.
Correct. Distillation is a technique where you use a stronger model's outputs to train a weaker one. The researchers are observing that Kimi's performance and how easily it interacts with Claude's internal reasoning, well, it suggests it might have been trained on those traces.
But correlation is not causation.
Exactly.
I hear the caveat, but I mean, you have to admit, it's a very heavy arrow pointing in one direction.
Oh, for sure.
You have fundamental security holes being exposed across the AI supply chain, from Python packages to the encrypted logic of the models themselves.
Yeah.
You have to wonder why we are pouring concrete on top of a foundation that is fundamentally compromised. Because the financial sector doesn't seem to care at all.
Not even a little bit.
Let's look at CoreWeave. They are essentially the landlord of the AI boom, right? Renting out massive clusters of GPUs. The briefing shows their recent quarter saw revenue shoot up 112% to $2.58 billion.
And revenue growth like that is exactly what captures headlines. But if you look at the underlying mechanics of their ledger, the fragility of the entire AI infrastructure thesis just becomes obvious.
Why is that?
Because their net loss widened dramatically from $290 million to $626 million.
Wait, if they doubled their revenue, how did their losses more than double?
Because the raw cost of running the infrastructure is bleeding them dry. Their operating expenses actually exceeded their revenue.
So they're losing money before they even pay the bank.
Exactly. Before you even factor in the cost of financing their debt, they posted a $49 million operating loss. They're losing money on the core business of running the servers.
And we haven't even touched the debt yet. They are carrying $35 billion in debt.
It's a staggering number.
And the loans they just took out, they borrow 5 years against contracts that average only 3 years. That is a ticking time bomb.
It really is.
If a customer walks away after 3 years, CoreWeave still owes the bank for 2 more years on hardware that will be totally obsolete by then.
Yeah, that math does not look good.
And the pricing on these loans, SOFR plus 5.50% with ratings of B2 and BB plus debt. For anyone listening who doesn't speak corporate finance, that is below investment grade. It is junk debt.
The credit agencies are pricing the debt to reflect the very real risk that the music stops.
Right. Are investors basically buying the boom while pricing in the hangover simultaneously?
That's a great way to put it. Management boasts a $104 billion backlog of contracted revenue, but there is absolutely no public reconciliation of that number.
So we don't know who owes them that money.
Exactly. We don't know the counterparty concentration. Are those ironclad contracts with Fortune 500 companies, or are they, you know, promises from AI startups that might not even exist in 12 months?
And why does the market accept this absolute lack of showing their work? No methodology, no bidding, unaudited benchmarks?
Because the FOMO is too strong, and it's not just private markets throwing money around blindly.
Right. The government is doing it, too.
Right.
We have a leaked draft memo from Deputy Secretary of Defense Stephen Feinberg. He directs a purchase of up to $243.9 million in AI services from Palantir running through March 2027.
And he explicitly calls for no competitive bidding.
Yes.
The omission in that memo is just glaring. Under 10 U.S.C. 3204, if the military is going to bypass competitive bidding, they are legally required to provide a written justification.
Right. You can't just skip it.
But this draft memo entirely omits that justification. It simply directs the purchase.
I do want to push back on the severity of this, though.
Mm.
The briefing makes it clear this is a draft memo's ceiling. It is an up-to figure.
Hmm.
Doesn't the Pentagon float drafts all the time that never materialize into finalized awards?
They do.
And the source couldn't even confirm if it was finalized.
Drafts do circulate, sure, but they signify intent. When a deputy secretary of defense circulates a draft directing a $250 million sole source contract without the legally required justification, it demonstrates a cultural willingness to just, you know, bypass standard procurement safeguards in the rush to adopt AI.
And that rush to deploy without showing the math is happening everywhere.
Everywhere.
Let's talk about the live facial recognition deployments. In Western Australia, Perth police scanned 130,000 faces in a single week against a watch list.
Okay.
This resulted in alerts and arrests. Meanwhile, British Transport Police in London scanned 530,000 faces since February. The result there, zero matches, zero arrests.
The disparity points to a complete lack of audited methodology.
Right.
I mean, a watch list is essentially a control point. How are these lists curated? What is the threshold for a match? We literally don't know.
And the data reporting is a mess. The briefing points out that two different reachable media outlets give entirely different arrest counts for the exact same week in Perth. One says 18, the other says 19.
And neither force's figures are independently audited.
Exactly. But the procedural failure in Western Australia is what really stands out to me. The police skipped an Aboriginal information assessment for this trial.
How do they justify that?
They claimed it wouldn't primarily affect Aboriginal people.
Yeah.
And they justified that by citing a UK National Physical Laboratory study on the algorithm, a study that didn't even test First Nations people.
It is a staggering lack of methodological rigor. They deployed a technology with massive civil liberties implications and justified bypassing local demographic assessments using irrelevant data from another hemisphere.
But all this money, all these frantic, unaudited deployments, they are chasing a very specific outcome.
This supposed revolution.
Right. The original pitch for this massive capital expenditure was that AI will revolutionize the economy and replace human labor. A year ago, AI CEOs were predicting half of all entry-level white-collar jobs would just vanish.
But the apocalypse looks very different when you examine the actual macroeconomic data.
What does the data say?
A recent analysis from a Stanford Institute looked at unemployment since 2022. They found that for workers classified as most exposed to AI, unemployment rose by 0.77%.
Which sounds ominous until you see the rest of the data.
Exactly.
Unemployment for workers least exposed to AI rose by 0.85%.
Yeah.
The highly exposed workers actually fared slightly better.
Yeah.
Now, if you are listening to this and wondering if your job is safe, we need to make something crystal clear. That tiny 0.08-point difference is not evidence of a protective effect from AI.
No, it's statistically insignificant.
Right. But it completely shatters the narrative of mass job destruction in the aggregate.
The aggregate data is flat, sure, but we have to balance that with concentrated shocks.
Like what's happening in India.
Exactly. The Financial Times just reported that India's massive IT sector, which employs around 6 million people, is cutting headcount by up to 6% this year.
Wow. You know, I have always hated that term, exposure.
How so?
Isn't exposure just an economist throwing a dart at an occupational chart? It assumes that if a task can be automated, it will be. But it completely ignores what a worker actually does day to day.
You are identifying the friction of reality. Exposure models assume seamless integration.
Which never happens.
Never. Reality involves office politics, legacy computer systems that barely work, and the fact that a job is a complex bundle of tasks. You can't just automate one task and fire the person if they still need to do the other 20 things.
So what are we actually seeing in the labor market then? If it's not pure job destruction, are companies just firing full-timers because they don't know what they need and creating a permanently disposable contractor class to figure it out?
I wouldn't go as far as calling it a permanently disposable class. What the data actually shows is a massive crisis of skills matching.
Interesting.
According to recent surveys in the brief, 74% of employers now demand AI skills. Half of them expect candidates to be advanced users on day one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The barrier to entry hasn't disappeared. It has just fundamentally shifted.
So we have fundamental security flaws, junk-rated funding, and a labor market that is confused rather than collapsing.
It's a perfect storm.
It really is. And this collision of hype and reality is rippling out into some truly bizarre market behaviors at the fringes. Let's do some quick hits from the brief.
Let's do it.
First up, CME and Silicon Data plan to list futures contracts on H100 and B200 GPU rental prices.
Compute is officially getting a financial ticker.
But true to our theme of nobody's showing their math today, Silicon Data has published zero index methodology for what the settlement reference will actually be.
Right. They are trading futures on a market with no transparent pricing baseline. It's wild.
Next is River AI. This is a two-month-old startup that just raised a $1.1 billion seed in Series A round.
2 months old.
Yep. Their pitch is building agents that you train yourself.
Right.
But they have no product, no hardware, and no customers yet. $1 billion for an idea.
It is the absolute pinnacle of pricing risk as growth.
Then there is NVIDIA's NeMo Switchyard. They open-sourced an agent model router claiming it cuts costs by 60%.
But if you read the fine print in the documentation, the baseline benchmark they used to claim that massive cost reduction was entirely internal.
And based on a pre-alpha build.
Right.
Again, yeah. Unaudited methodologies. And finally, my absolute favorite story of the day, the Galway Bookstore.
This one is crazy.
It is. Independent bookshops in Ireland and Berlin are receiving highly suspicious bulk orders. We are talking 5,000 physical books at a time for hyper-niche titles. One of the orders was for a 2018 driving test guide for Ireland.
The independent sellers strongly suspect that AI firms are buying up cheap physical stock simply to shred it and scan it for training data.
Which comes right after several recent high-profile crackdowns on digital piracy by book publishers.
Exactly.
Tie this together for me because it is so absurd. Tech giants, with billions of dollars and access to the sum of human knowledge, are literally resorting to shredding obscure paperbacks to feed the machine.
It illustrates the absolute desperation for high-quality human-generated data. They have scraped the internet clean. They have exhausted the digital reserves.
So they're going back to print.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now they are resorting to the industrial-scale digitization of physical books because the models are starving for training tokens. It is a very physical, messy manifestation of a purely digital gold rush.
It is incredible. Okay, to wrap up today, let's pivot to a lighter yet profoundly revealing finding from the kicker of the brief.
This was a really interesting study.
Yeah. Researchers at the University of Washington tested 6 leading AI models with 23,800 prompts. They asked the models to write a simple children's story about a talking animal, but they intentionally left the gender of the animal unstated.
And the results are incredibly telling about how these systems are engineered under the hood.
Right.
Out of nearly 24,000 stories, 57% featured an ungendered animal, 41% featured a male lead, and a mere 2%, just 513 stories, featured a female lead.
2%. We are talking about basic fairy tales. How does a multi-billion dollar system accidentally erase female characters?
You have to look at the mechanism of safety training. The researchers hypothesize that AI labs are attempting to enforce neutrality as a bias mitigation tactic.
Okay, so trying to be fair.
Right. They train the models to avoid pronouns in ambiguous contexts, pushing them to use it or remain ungendered. But by applying this blunt force safety filter, the labs inadvertently destroyed the demographic balance entirely.
It's the perfect example of a safety measure doing something nobody designed. The engineers tried to remove bias, and instead, they hard-coded a massive blind spot.
Absolutely.
Which leaves you, the listener, with this to ponder. If a blunt force attempt at algorithmic neutrality accidentally erases an entire demographic from a simple story about a talking animal, what happens when we silently apply those exact same invisible safety guardrails to the AI systems deciding your loan approvals, your medical diagnoses, or your legal sentencing?
It demonstrates that the mechanics of bias are deeply embedded in the architecture itself, far beyond what a simple software patch can resolve.
You try to build an impenetrable system for fairness, and you end up leaving the master key to discrimination sitting right in the code. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. We will catch you next time.